Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
All right, Matt, so I learned something new the other day about the Canary Islands. Did you know that there's not a single canary on the Canary Islands?
Really?
Yep. And on the Virgin Islands, it's the same thing. Not a single canary.
Yeah. Good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm glad I'm not in the Canary Islands, I can tell you.
Right, right. Glad I'm not in the Virgin Islands either, so.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it might be good. I don't know.
You know, no canaries, so.
That's true. That's true. Not a canary anywhere. Before we get into it, we'll say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're happy to be associated with, and you can find some tips and tricks on podcasting if you're into such things. Also, we've said it here a lot lately, but we mean it. Go check out our sponsors. That's how you help Graveyard Tales, and that's how we stay free as a free show, is our sponsors and our patrons. So if something interests you that we talk about in an ad, go click the link in the show notes and go over there and check it out. You can find you something cool, get you a discount on it. And Matt and I don't take sponsors that we don't believe in. You know, if we do an ad on it, it's because we like the product and believe in what they do. And we think y'all will like it too. So go over there and check them out. Also, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. We've got multiple different levels that you can sign up for. All of the levels get a bonus episode a week, and we have a huge back catalog of bonus episodes there. Plus, our $5 and $10 levels, they get the ad-free audio and video versions of the main episodes. And then our $10 a month, they get the second show that we do, SideQuest. And we've been doing it for over a year now, which seems like a long time compared to what it feels like for us, because it's gone fast because we enjoy doing SideQuest. But if you like me and Matt and you want to hear us talk about stuff that's not Graveyard Tales related, like I'm doing one tonight, I haven't told Matt what it's about, but it's going to be a little game for him. So he gets to play a game. So if you want to see us do stuff like that, or talk about personal stuff or whatever, go over there, sign up, become a $10 patron, and you can get all of the extra stuff plus SideQuest. Now we've already gotten a couple people send it in, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's never too early to send us your stories for this year's Listener Stories episode. If you send it in and put Listener Stories on there, I will save it, and we will do it this year. Rather be early than late.
Right.
Because if you get it in late, we're going to have to hold it till next year. But if you had something happen to you last weekend and you're like, I want to tell the Graveyard Tales boys about this. Well, go ahead and send it in. I will save it for our listener stories episode at the end of the year and you'll have it on the show. But on that note, Matt, that's all I've got for the boring intro stuff that everybody probably skips past anyway, until they hear me say this. All right, Matt. So what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right. So tonight, Adam and I are going to discuss what is widely considered to be the most well-documented UFO case in U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
It occurred in 1964 in the town of Socorro, New Mexico. And Adam, here we are once again talking about UFOs and yep. New Mexico.
I know.
I mean, it is like the UFO capital of the world.
Yeah, there's a little strip, it seems like, right there, and New Mexico is in it, that is just lousy with UFOs. And I don't know exactly why, but
I know it's interesting. There's a lot of activity around there, you know, military wise, things like that. Of course, you know, that it's a lot of desert,
mm-hmm.
you know, so there's a lot of basically uninhabited land.
Right.
You know, so it's always been interesting to me. It's kind of where the modern UFO story begins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only fitting that the most documented UFO case occurred there.
Right.
Lonnie Zamora was working as a sergeant for the Socorro Police Department when on April 24th of 1964, he witnessed a flying object land near a rocky dirt road, and what he saw would change his life forever.
Mm-hmm.
So, Adam, let's dig into the Zamora UFO incident.
All right. So, as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information. We got a lot of sources. And it's because Matt and I have not gone out there ourselves and talked to anybody related with the case in New Mexico.
Yeah.
So we have to get,
I've never been to New Mexico. I've flown over it. I've just never been down in it.
Right. Yeah. I would like to spend some time in there as an adult. I went there as a kid to White Sands, mm-hmm. New Mexico with my parents, but I was so young that I barely remember any of it. So I need to spend some adult time there.
See, Amanda doesn't know this yet, but mm-hmm. we have plans for our retirement. We're gonna sell our house and buy an RV, and we're gonna go over to all these places that we've never been. You know, like Mount Rushmore, the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. you know, Yellowstone, all these places that we've always wanted to go. But what she doesn't know is that we're gonna visit all these weird haunted places that we've talked about.
So there you go.
We're going to go to White Sands, New Mexico. We're going to go to Area 51. We're going to see all these places firsthand.
There you go.
Okay. And
that if we're still doing Graveyard Tales, then that'll be good on-site reporting.
Right. By that time, you know, they'll have that whole satellite dish technology on the RV down
right.
pat. And we can just stay connected while we go.
Exactly. I'll just I'll have to come with you probably, you know, just for integrity's sake.
That's exactly so, you know, right. Just to make sure.
Right. I'll have to go. But yeah, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes and keep learning if you're interested in, and you can see where we got this information and from whom we got the information. So first, we need to talk about Socorro a little bit. Now, Socorro, New Mexico, it sits along the Rio Grande River, or Rio Grande, however you want to say it.
It fits the song better. You know,
yeah,
I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande.
But, I mean, I've heard it both ways. Down here, we say Grande. You go just a few minutes north, and it's Grand, it doesn't matter. It's the same river. It's the big river. Now, the area around present-day Socorro, New Mexico, originally it was inhabited by the Piro people. So a Puebloan group that settled that area around the 1200s. Now, Spanish explorer Juan de Oñate, he led an expedition north from Mexico in 1598. And then the Piro people of the Tepana Pueblo welcomed him and his party, and they gave him food and water and stuff like that. Well, Oñate was super grateful for their assistance, so he named them Socorro, which meant help or aid in Spanish. So if you're interested, that's what that means. Now, after Oñate's arrival, the Socorro kind of became a significant stop along El Camino Real, or the trade route that connected Mexico City to Santa Fe. Now, Spanish missionaries would establish missions, including Nuestra Señora de Perpetuo Socorro in 1626, and San Miguel Mission, which became central to the community. So Spanish families would settle around these missions, and farming and ranching on land grants from the Spanish crown were very common in that area. Now, there was a rebellion, and when the rebellion broke out among a lot of the Pueblo people in 1680, the Tepanas and settlers left the area. So this rebellion broke out, and they said, nope, we're done. We're out of here. Now, the town was not reestablished until more than a century later in 1816. So this one rebellion in 1680 kind of cleared that area of Socorro of people, which it's fascinating to me that it took more than a century for people to come back to the area. You would think if it's a good area with water and food, that it wouldn't have taken more than a century. Now, by 1833, the area had started to grow, and the population started to get bigger. And so they had over 400 residents in the village and nearly 1,800 in the area around that village. Now, after Mexico gained independence from Spain in 1821, Socorro became part of the Mexican territory. And then the region continued to be colonized, and they developed it more and everything. Well, following the Mexican-American War, Socorro became part of the United States in 1848. So Socorro County was officially established in 1852 with the city of Socorro as its seat. And at that time, the county's boundaries, get this, Matt, stretched from Texas to California.
Good night. So
the Socorro County went from Texas to California. That's a long way for one county.
Oh, no kidding.
You know, there's some counties I've been in that, like, I had this joke. My mom, at one point, moved out to Howe, Texas. Mm-hmm. Little, small town. And I used to have the joke that it was called Howe because you couldn't get howdy out before you passed through the boundary of Howe.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, I've seen counties that are that way. You can jump and end from one county line to the other county line. So for this to stretch from Texas to California, it's crazy, but it was later reduced and new counties were formed in that area. But Socorro stayed like the center of that breakup there. Now in 1854, Fort Craig was built in the area to protect settlers and the trade route from Apache and Navajo raids. So the fort was very significant during the Civil War, and it served as a Union post. And the Battle of Valverde in 1862, which had a Confederate victory, took place near Socorro. So Socorro kept developing as a regional hub, supporting agriculture, mining, and later technological research. And during World War II, the nearby White Sands Missile Range became the site of the first atomic bomb test in 1945. And we'll talk more about the White Sands Missile Range here in just a second. Well, today, Socorro is recognized for what they call a rich blend of indigenous Spanish and American history, as well as its role in education and science. And all of that is due to New Mexico Tech and its proximity to the Bosque de Apache National Wildlife Refuge. Now, in 1953, Socorro briefly declared itself the Free Republic of Socorro as a publicity stunt to highlight the local grievances with state government. Now, this act, they said, included issuing, quote, citizenships and charging tolls at a mock port of entry, and it drew national attention and it boosted tourism in the area. So, kind of funny that Socorro did this as a publicity stunt. Now, the Battle of Valverde that I mentioned, I didn't put a lot of it in my notes just because, I mean, for time saving sake, really. But if you're interested, go look up the Battle of Valverde. It was quite a bloody battle. And just kind of keep that in mind for the area, you know, as we go. Because I'm a firm believer that the history of the land of a place usually determines the future and what happens on there. So I mentioned White Sands Missile Range. So let's look at White Sands Missile Range, or WSMR. It's a major U.S. Army military testing area that's located in southern New Mexico. So WSMR, the missile range, began as the Alamogordo Bombing and Gunnery Range, and it was established in 1941 in response to the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Now, the range, they created it for military testing and weapons testing because of its remote, isolated location in the Tularosa Basin. So, like Matt mentioned earlier, this area is remote. You know, there's a lot of open desert here where there aren't people. So the White Sands Missile Range also had quite a big role in the Manhattan Project. So if you know anything about the Manhattan Project, it's where the first atomic bomb was developed during World War II. And White Sands played a pivotal role in that, in the development and testing of these atomic bombs. On July 16, 1945, the world's first atomic bomb was detonated at the Trinity site on White Sands Missile Range, which is about 65 miles north of White Sands National Monument. So we've even, not just testing, we've got them detonating atomic bombs in the area. And to me, I'll explain why this matters later when Matt's talking. I'll interrupt him to say this. The atomic bomb testing here seems to be very important. And it, to me, it plays into UFO lore with White Sands. Now, the Trinity site is now a National Historic Landmark, and public tours are sometimes held there. Now, after World War II, White Sands Missile Range became a central part of the U.S. missile and rocket development. The U.S., at that point, this is when they brought over German scientist Operation Paperclip. You know, they brought over Wernher von Braun, and who was the one that developed the V-2 rocket for Germany, and they brought him here to test rockets and missiles in this area. Now, between 1946 and 1951, 67 captured German V-2 rockets were test fired here. So they say this laid the groundwork for American rocketry and space exploration. So let's look at a brief timeline rundown here. In 1945, the site was renamed White Sands Proving Grounds, and in 1958, it became White Sands Missile Range. Now, White Sands Missile Range expanded to include a variety of test facilities and launch complexes for a bunch of different missile systems. And they give the examples as the Nike Hercules and the Nike Zeus.
Man, I had a pair of those.
Yep, that was my joke. Matt hit my joke before I got it. I'll give it to you. It was an obvious joke.
That's so right. That. That's about all I can get anymore. You got to give me the low-hanging fruit, man.
Can't hold it against you, brother. Now, this area also played a major role during the Cold War because it supported missile defense, nuclear weapons development, and the arms race against the Soviet Union. Now, this area also supported NASA's space program, including Apollo program test. And in 1982, it served as the landing site for the space shuttle Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Adam, let's talk about one of tonight's sponsors, Graza Olive Oil. Now, it is great stuff. And I mean, you know, if you're thinking olive oil, really? But you've not tried an olive oil quite like Graza. I mean, it is fantastic. It's fresh, it's never blended, and it comes from a single type of olive, the picual, straight out of Jaén, Spain, where over half of the world's olive oil is produced. And so last night, I cleaned up the griddle,
mm-hmm.
and I grilled some chicken and some chorizo, and I used the Graza frizzle that is high heat. And man, I'm telling you, it works amazing and it tastes fantastic. It adds a flavor mm-hmm. to your food that you're not going to find in just regular, just get whatever olive oil.
Yeah, right.
It's not going to be the same, I promise.
Right. And like you said, that frizzle, which is their newest one, it's designed for that type of cooking. So you're not going to get an off taste with it. And you're like, well, why should we use Graza? Why should I use Graza over other olive oils? Well, it's because they have single origin goodness. They use only one olive from one region. So they don't have any of these mysterious blends that you get out there. So it means a traceable, fresher product without mixing in lower grade unknown oils. And they come in the super fun squeeze and spray bottles. And I'm going to tell you, I've done the griddle thing like Matt's talking about, and you don't have these messy tins or drippy spouts to deal with. You twist the little top on your squeezy thing and you just go all over your griddle. It's perfect. And they've got the three different types. The frizzle, which Matt was talking about, it's their newest one, so it has a higher 490 degree Fahrenheit smoke point. Perfect for frying, crisping, grilling, slapping on your griddle if you want to cook stuff up. They've got the sizzle, which is a 410 degree Fahrenheit, and that's your everyday cooking, roasting, marinating, sautéing. Ashley uses it all the time when she's cooking dinner. I see her reach over there and grab our bottle of Graza and just squirt it in a pan and get going. And then the drizzle, which is a bold, punchy finishing oil, so you can put it on salads, dip bread in it, or even top off ice cream like Matt likes to do.
Oh, yeah.
And we like to do the bread in olive oil to feel real fancy at the dinner table. And we haven't found a better tasting olive oil than the drizzle from Graza. Now, if you want to get 10% off your first order on Graza's site, you can. And we suggest grabbing the trio. So that's all three of the squeezy bottles, sizzle, frizzle, and drizzle, so that you're set for every style of cooking. And all you've got to do that is go to graza.co, graza.co, and use our promo code GRAVE to get that 10% off the trio that includes the sizzle, frizzle, and drizzle.
Yeah, just head to graza.co and use our promo code GRAVE and get 10% off and pick yourself up the trio, get that sizzle, frizzle, and drizzle, and you'll take your cooking to the next level, I promise. So now, well, I know we're going into more of this, but it's becoming grossly obvious, you know, why this area may be a hotbed for activity like this. I mean, look at what's going on. I mean, this is kind of, this is where all of this stuff was born. Space exploration, you know, atomic weapons. And who's going to take notice of that? I mean, outside of the Earth, you know, some other civilization might be very interested in the fact that, hey, over here in this part of the world, they're doing some big time stuff. We need to go check this out.
Right. You know? Right. And that's kind of what I was going to interrupt you with. So now I'll just interrupt you now, cause it's a good time. That we see a lot of UFO activity, quote unquote, UFO activity around military bases that house atomic weapons, nuclear weapons, or we see it around nuclear disaster sites as well.
Yeah.
So there seems to be a nuclear component to UFO sightings. And this being where they tested the first atomic bomb we had. And then you've got this whole area, White Sands Missile Range. You move over and you get to Area 51, and you got a whole bunch of other military bases in this area. And this area, New Mexico, Arizona, all of this area. It, to me, it would say, yeah, there's, like you said, there's going to be interest from another race of beings if they are here, and if they are checking us out, they're going to want to check out this crap that we're doing over here.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, why are these large hairless apes blowing holes in the desert? What are they doing? What are they gearing up for? So you're going to want to keep an eye on it. Now, we just mentioned NASA and some scientific research. So in 1962, NASA actually established the White Sands Test Facility adjacent to the missile range for rocket engine and rocket propulsion testing. So that facility actually tested over 700 rocket engines in more than 4 million firings for NASA missions, including the space shuttle and other spacecraft. So that area was busy for NASA.
Right.
But again, it was a kind of a desolate area.
Sure.
Yeah. They didn't have to worry about, oh, are we going to set something on fire and it catch a whole neighborhood on fire?
Yeah. Yeah. Are we going to attract a lot of attention from civilians that are going to want to come out here like looky-loos and want to see what we're up to?
Right.
You know,
right.
And also you consider this, you stick something like this out in the desert where you're working on it. It's real easy if somebody just decides to show up and try to watch. So other countries, you know, espionage wise, you have an advantage when you're out in an area like this, because you can see what's coming for miles and miles and miles. There's nowhere to hide.
Right. And you know the people that are supposed to be there. And if there's another body outside of the people that are supposed to be there, you know they are uninvited.
Yeah.
It's not like in a crowd where you're like, I don't know, do they work for us? Are they supposed to witness this? It's like, no, nobody's supposed to witness this.
Exactly. You know, it'd be, if you wouldn't do something like this. Of course you need the room, but you know, like in the mountains or in the forest, you know, stuff like that, because it'd be too easy for somebody to sneak up on you.
You wouldn't do it around Clarksville because there's too many people around
That's
there.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, I found a couple of what they call notable incidents and developments in the area. and I just thought I'd mention them. Now, over the decades, White Sands Missile Range saw several notable incidents, one of them being an errant rocket launch that landed outside the range. And what that happened a few times in their testing.
So if, yeah, I would imagine.
Believe it or not. But one of them actually happened in 1947, and it crashed near Juarez, Mexico. So that was not just a little errant. That was
a lot errant. Yeah.
A lot errant. Yeah. But the range also hosted a wide array of military and scientific tests. Like I said, from missile defense systems to electronic countermeasures and satellite tracking.
Yeah.
So they were testing stuff for tracking enemy satellites and how to deal with electronic countermeasures from, you know, if you have, say, EMP pulses from an enemy, they were testing how to deter that.
Yeah. And, you know, that that area in Mexico, that the zone of silence.
Yep.
That was another area where supposedly an errant missile, yeah, an errant rocket,
exactly,
landed there. And
it came from White Sands.
Exactly. And so, mm-hmm, you know, it's like we know that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not 100% sure if it actually caused this weird anomaly there where,
or if the weird anomaly brought it there.
That, yeah, I mean, two sides to the same coin, you know. It's a,
mm-hmm,
so what caused what,
right?
You know,
right? So real briefly, because I searched high and low and I just could not find a lot of information on Mr. Zamora.
You should have used Google. I haven't used high and low in a long time.
Yeah, it's an old one, but I felt it was tried and true. You know, if you know the search engine, just use it. I mean, why branch out to new stuff like Google? I mean, how long have they been around? Have they been proven to actually, you know, look up in? I don't know anything about Google. I mean,
he's going to tell me to shut up here in a minute.
No, I'll just talk a lot of crap and make you regret saying anything. Set him off again. Now, Lonnie Zamora, he was born on September 7th, 1933. You know who else was born on September 7th? Me.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he had my birthday just a few decades before me. Mm-hmm. But
I was thinking of someone maybe a little less famous than you.
Oh, yeah. No. That's the thing. You would have to go less famous because there's not many people more famous than Adam from Graveyard Tales. Maybe right. Matt from Graveyard Tales, but I don't know. That's
close.
That's so close. He was born in Magdalena, New Mexico. Now, Zamora, he was a police officer, and he served as a police officer from the 1950s until he retired. So he didn't have, like, any other job. He got in and was a police officer from one of his first jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed there until retirement. And he gained this reputation among his colleagues for having integrity and being very reliable. His colleagues described him as a, quote, no-nonsense officer. And he had no history of lying or sensationalism or, you know, making stuff up or getting drunk and spinning a yarn.
Right.
So that, to me, is also very important to what we're about to talk about. Now, Lonnie ended up marrying Mary Kaka in 1954, and they had three children. And I had to make sure that I said her last name that way,
mm-hmm,
because it looks like Kaka. And I didn't want to call her that. I don't know the lady. I'm sure she was a great lady. So I would hate to besmirch her name that way. So, and I even looked up, how do you pronounce that name?
Yeah.
And it said Kaka.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I'm going to say Kaka. Now, Lonnie passed away from a heart attack on November 2nd, 2009.
Yeah.
So he lived a long life.
He did.
He had a long life of honesty and integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, at no point during this did anyone ever really question his integrity or his honesty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of people revered him for that, and that put a lot of weight behind his story.
Sure.
Because he did not have a history of this. So, as Adam said, he was a local police officer. He was an extremely ordinary guy. He was doing his job. You know, he was good at his job. He had friends. People respected him. You know, nothing unusual. You know, a real salt of the earth kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
But one evening, he found himself chasing a car full of teenagers that was speeding on the outskirts of town.
Dang teens.
And he looked, yeah. If you can't speed in the desert, where are you going to speed?
That's a good point.
But he noticed something off the side of the road, which to him looked like an overturned white car in a ditch out in the desert.
That would take precedent over a speeder.
Well, sure. Sure. So he decided, he broke off the chase and he's going to go check this out. Now, he says initially he recalls hearing this really loud roar right before he noticed it and he broke off the chase. So when he went, he expected to find evidence of an explosion, like maybe the car had hit a dynamite shack or something like that. But instead, what he saw was what he described as a shiny white car-sized object. He said the object was egg-shaped, and it was standing on four legs, and it had this unusual insignia printed on the side.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that ain't a car.
It's not a car. Okay. First of all, he saw no wheels.
Yeah. He saw legs.
And legs instead. And this weird insignia, which he described as being something similar to an arrow pointing vertically from a horizontal base to a half circle crown. So a very rudimentary, you know, a horizontal line, an arrow sticking up from it with a with a semicircle across the top. Okay. That's what he initially described it as.
Right.
Now, as he's driving over there, he says he lost sight of it briefly because of the hills and the mounds and everything. So he's driving off the road and he gets past the hills. And when he gets about 150 yards from the site, he reports that he saw two figures standing next to it who weren't quite fully adult sized, but they were larger than children.
Mm.
So I don't know what, something between like maybe 4 and 5 feet tall, something like that, you know,
like a short teenager.
Yeah. Maybe. Bigger than a little kid, but you know, definitely not, you know, a full grown adult.
Right.
And he describes what they were wearing as white coveralls, you know, like what you saw these dudes, the caddies at the Masters wearing. You know, white overall, white coveralls, which white is not a typical color for coveralls, but you know, unless you just like to look nasty,
dirty all the time.
So this was more than unusual, you know, to Lonnie when he pulled up and saw this. Now he said, as he got closer, the pair of individuals got back onto the craft. And the craft took off and flew away, emitting a bluish flame.
Huh.
And Zamora says this. This is a quote. He said, "I saw this flame come up from underneath it. Then I ran back behind the car, and it went up to 20, 30 feet in the air. It just stayed there for a while, and then finally, it took off slowly to the west. At first, you know, after I got to my senses, I said, 'Did I see it or didn't I?'" He said, "What happened, you know?"
Yeah.
And I think, you know, most people are exactly like that. You see yep. something that is so unusual. You begin to question yourself, is, did I really see sure. that? Am I dreaming? You know, is it a mirage? What the hell was that?
Right.
Because your brain wants to try to explain it. And so you yeah. begin
with
to start
you know.
Thinking of, what could that possibly be?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. All right, so let's take a second and talk about one of tonight's sponsors, Fume. Now, you've heard us talk about Fume before, but we want to tell you about it again. Fume is a flavored air device that helps you quit your bad habits. You know, we've all got some kind of bad habit, and most of us want to quit. So if you want to quit that bad habit, Fume can help you because it's just a flavored air device. And I have to say, man, I was using it. I was drawing through the fume one day, and Ashley's mom was over. And she goes, "What is that?" And I told her, and she goes, "Oh, can I try it?" So I let her try it, and I had the spearmint in there at that time. And she goes, "Okay, I need one of these." So we bought her one, and I'll tell you what, she has put down her other bad habit. I see her with the fume in her hands all the time. And I have bought her the new refill packs for the spearmint, because that's the one she loves. So I know she's using it because we keep buying her the new packs, but I'm really proud of her. So I have quit my bad habits, and so has my mother-in-law, thanks to Fume.
Yeah, and one of the problems I always had with breaking a bad habit was I needed to do something with my hands. And mm-hmm. the coolest thing about the Fume flavored air device is that it's, number one, it looks cool. I mean, it's made with metal. It's made with wood. They've got different designs. It's clicky. You can mm-hmm. twist it and click it. You can. It's magnetic, and it's got great magnets. You can pull it apart, click it back together. So it gives you something to do with your hands that takes away what you have been doing with your hands.
Right, right.
And... you know, that I've got to, I want to put something in my mouth. It takes the place of that. And instead of inhaling vapor, you right. are inhaling air, flavored mm-hmm. air. And they've got great flavors. As Adam mentioned, the spearmint, my favorite was the maple black pepper.
Yeah.
But there's so many flavors. You can absolutely find a flavor that will help you stop your bad habits. So give Fume a try. So to try Fume, all Graveyard Tales listeners have to do is go to tryfume.com. That's tryfume.com/tales and use our promo code TALES, TALES, to kick your bad habit today.
That's right. Fume has already helped over 400,000 people take steps toward better habits, and so it's your turn now. So like Matt said, use our code TALES, T-A-L-E-S, and get a free gift with your journey pack. Head to TryFume, TryFume.com, and use our code TALES to claim this limited time offer today. I heard him... it wasn't him describing it, but I heard somebody that knew him say that he was talking about that blue flame mm-hmm. that came out of the bottom of it. And he said something that it didn't do like normal rocket flames where it hits the ground and disperses.
Yeah.
It actually hit the ground and penetrated so that it looked like it stopped at ground level.
Yeah.
It didn't do the...
it didn't plume out.
Right.
Like you
right.
would expect.
You watch... Yeah, you watch a rocket launch, and because it's shooting down, it kind of rolls out to the side.
Mm-hmm.
He said it didn't do that. It was just a straight cylinder of blue flame that went into the ground, which I thought was weird.
Yeah. So when Lonnie kind of gathers himself, he goes over to his patrol car and he radios his friend and fellow officer, Sam Chavez. So when Chavez arrives at the scene, which was only a couple of minutes, according to Sam, he said that Lonnie was really shaken up by whatever it was that he saw. And Chavez notes that there were marks on the ground that appeared to be made by some type of landing gear. And so he describes the markings and says, quote, "We found some indention on the ground where this thing had landed, and the marks into the ground were 9 inches deep."
Wow.
He said they were 8 inches long and 9 inches wide. That's big. I mean, you know, I can,
yeah,
you know, you can imagine you see something like that and you're like, what in the heck would have caused these to be here and spaced out? And that's what led him to believe that it was some type of landing gear.
Yeah. And those are deep. So it had to either be heavy or hit with some force.
Sure. So Chavez goes on and says, "I started to look for tracks, human tracks.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing I found were impressions on the ground that were made by a perfect circle." He said, "I found no human tracks, no shoe prints at all." He doesn't go in and describe that perfect circle anymore, but that's not something you would expect to see. I wouldn't.
No.
I mean, you know what? If you saw something like that, you would assume that something man-made did it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That there was a man-made structure. Perfect circles do not just typically occur like that in
nature.
In nature.
Yeah. You know?
At least not, you know, a physical object that would create, you know, an imprint of a perfect circle. So Captain Richard T. Holder was sent by the White Sands Missile Range to investigate. So Holder says he initially thought it had to be something that came from the range and that there could possibly be injured civilians.
Mm-hmm.
But Holder says after he surveyed the area, he started to think, this didn't come from us. You know, this wasn't anything that we had anything to do with.
Well, and that's the thing. They would know, like, right away, because they've had so many errant missiles, they would know what it looked like. Yeah.
Well, and you would think that they would know if they were launching or testing something, that it got away from them.
Yeah. They wouldn't be just randomly shooting crap off and going, well, don't know where that one went.
Right. It's not like 4th of July fireworks over there with a bunch of bunch of kids out there shooting stuff off. Hey, watch this one. You know, they kind of know what's going on whenever it's happening.
They're not cheap. They got to keep up with them.
So he starts to think, yeah, something else happened here. I'm not really sure, but it wasn't anything that we did.
Right.
So Holder reports that he, too, saw strange marks on the ground. He also saw a bush that was burnt. He says, like, to a crisp, but only on one side.
That's weird.
Which would indicate, you know, a really hot flame that was concentrated. You know, like a brush fire or anything else that would have eventually set the entire bush on fire. So, and it wasn't necessarily like a spark. It had to be like a really hot, intense flame and then gone. But
like when
burn that part of the bush, you know, it didn't set it ablaze. It scorched it immediately.
Yep. Like when you have one of those little butane torches, either for cocktail smoker or like I use one in the shop to char wood.
Yeah.
If you have such an intense flame like that, it normally only scorches the little bit that you're holding it over.
Yeah. And doesn't catch it on fire unless it's right. there for a while.
Right.
You know,
it just carbonizes the wood.
Exactly. And so that's what Holder is describing this bush, you know, looking like. But he says at the time, what he saw supported Lonnie Zamora's story. You know, he listened to Lonnie's story, and what he saw looking around, the bush, the markings on the ground, everything seemed pretty consistent up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, State Trooper Ted Jordan was taking pictures of the scene when he reports that Air Force officials confiscated his camera. Just came up and were like, I'll take that.
I'd be like, no.
And you got to think, if you're a law enforcement officer and you're taking pictures of a scene because you've been called out to investigate an incident, these pictures are important. You know, mm-hmm. they are a part of your investigation. You are responsible for turning them in as evidence.
Right.
And for an Air Force official to show up and go, give me that camera. You've got to believe that Ted said, who the hell are you?
You know, mm-hmm, right.
I'm
get off my camera, dude.
This is my camera. I'm doing an investigation. You know, yep. what authority
holds up his
do
badge.
You, yeah. What authority
I'm
do
I'm
you
law
have?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, obviously, you know, they had some authority because he gave it up.
Yep. They pulled rank on him.
Another witness, which was never identified, claimed to have pulled into a nearby gas station later that day. And he told a gas station employee that he and his family had seen a UFO similar to the one that Lonnie described. And the object apparently flew over the top of their car, traveling what they estimated was about 150 miles an hour.
Hmm.
So
it's pretty fast.
You know, I guess it's one of those things where somebody says this, they don't realize what's going on. They haven't seen Zamora. They haven't seen the police presence over there at the site. They saw the aftermath of this thing taking off and flying away. And when they finally pull into a gas station to refuel, they're telling some guy that's working there, you won't believe what we just saw. And, you know, the story went from there. They didn't know who he was. And I guess after this story kind of came out, you know, they thought, I would rather not be involved, you know?
Yeah.
I don't need the police and or the Air Force coming to my home to talk to me about this. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't really blame him.
yeah, right.
Now, in the investigation of the incident, the Air Force brought in members of Project Blue Book, which was their official UFO investigation team. We've talked about Project Blue Book many times in these UFO stories that we've done. Over its 17-year operation, Project Blue Book collected and analyzed thousands of UFO reports from various sources, including military, civilian reports, pilots, weather observers, and just the general public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just people out in the community going, hey, we all saw something. Was it yours? Are y'all testing something?
Yep.
And of the 12,618 sightings that Project Blue Book reported on, just over 700 remained classified as unexplained after their investigation, meaning they could not conclusively interpret what had actually happened. So you think, wow, you still got over 11,000 of them and said this is what it was? You came up with a plausible explanation for what it was.
Plausible.
Yeah. But 700 of them, you couldn't make up a good enough story to explain it?
Yeah. It was so weird that even the government couldn't come up with a BS
right.
explanation
and,
for it.
And you know, you know, hundreds of these stories are weather balloons. God, I've never seen a weather balloon in my entire life. Okay. Mm-mm. I've seen a picture of one. That's about it.
Yeah.
I've never looked up in the sky and seen anything that could remotely be described as a weather balloon. But yet, in the 20, 30 years of UFO history that we have from the 60s to the 1990s, they're freaking everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just bizarre. Now, I would imagine that a lot of those stories, they said, all right, was White Sands testing something that day? Yes. Okay. That's what it was. Is there some top secret new military aircraft that you're trying out or you're doing? Yes. Okay. We can't tell the public that. All we can say is that it was y'all's fault.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yep.
But still, out of all those things they could say of what it was, 700 of them, they were like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we don't know what the hell that was.
Yep. We can't even make them believe this, so let's just move on.
And one of those 700 was the Lonnie Zamora incident.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, we've talked about briefly before. He was an astronomer, and he was a consultant on Project Blue Book. Now, Dr. Hynek was a very well-respected individual. He was not some fly off the cuff, you know, just say whatever kind of person. He took this job very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
When he talked about the Lonnie Zamora case, he said that he thought that Lonnie Zamora was a credible witness. And he, like Captain Holder, felt that the physical evidence and Zamora's story showed no signs of being a hoax, meaning that it wasn't somebody else, you know, playing a prank and making it look like something. It wasn't Zamora making it up. You know, what was described in the story is exactly what the evidence they investigated supported.
And that's good that he even said, you know, this is not somebody screwing with Zamora. You know, we know it's not Zamora doing it, but it's also not somebody trying to pick on Zamora and get him to say something crazy.
And as Adam mentioned earlier in talking about Lonnie Zamora, he was not this type of guy. You know, his superior officers at the police station knew him well and knew that he wasn't one of these people that was susceptible to these fantastic stories, or, you know, he wasn't interested in talking about this kind of stuff. You know, this was way off of his radar. So for him to come forward with a story like this, they believed him strictly because of who he was and that they knew
him. And the other thing with it wasn't somebody picking on Zamora. This is something we've talked about in Bigfoot cases and stuff. Why would somebody try to pull a prank out in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, who's going to see it?
No, who's going to know that Zamora is going to be chasing a car full of teens speeding through this area at that exact time to be able to sit there and play the joke on them?
Or anyone for that matter. And
yeah, that's true.
If you're going to do something like this, wouldn't you do it closer to where it's more populated, where you've got a better chance of maybe even several somebody seeing it and reporting on it?
Right.
It does. Yeah. The whole idea that part was a hoax, that the craft, the beings that he saw, that all that was a hoax, is just like, that doesn't wash.
Mm-hmm.
But after their investigation, the Air Force said they agreed that Lonnie actually saw something, but they insisted that it must have been a top secret military aircraft, even though they never ever released any documentation that said, oh yeah, we were testing something. Now, of course, this was the Air Force now. This wasn't necessarily what the members of Project Blue Book were saying. This was what, you know, Project Blue Book presented their information to the Air Force as they would. And the Air Force came out with this official story that said, this is what it had to be. He saw something, but it had to be this. We understand how confusing that must have been for him. And that he didn't fully understand. But this is all it was.
Right. What gets me about that, though, is the first initial officer out there from the military said, this is not one of ours. Mm-hmm. And we know from these recent Tic Tac videos that have come out, the people working there on the ships and in the planes said, we don't do testing in an area without letting the other military know.
Yeah, right.
Because we don't want an incident.
Yeah. You don't want to get your top secret aircraft shot down.
Right. Them think it's, back in that time, them think it's the Russians or something. And they're like, oh no, we're being invaded, Red Dawn style. Mm-hmm. Let's shoot it down.
Yeah. Shoot first, so ask questions later.
Right. You would want to let them know, hey, don't shoot at this. I can't tell you what it is, but this is us. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to go into detail, but you would let them know you're doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as odd as the Air Force's explanation sounds, a lot of the UFO experts did not believe it. And one of those was author Jerome Clark, who also said the official explanation doesn't hold water. And Clark said this, he said, they were never able to find any such evidence that any such thing was being tested at the time. And in fact, even today, not an iota of evidence has emerged to support that claim. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, the Air Force line on the case is that this is a credible witness. He clearly saw some kind of structured flying vehicle, and that it must have been something we built, even if we can't find it anywhere. Okay.
That's a weird thing to say.
Yeah, right. I mean, we're like, how often do you have stuff that you've been working on just go missing, or you don't know, you don't have a documents of it being tested, you know?
Well, and if there were two people with it, where did those two pilots go? And you don't have them as, MIA or something?
Yeah. Why wouldn't those two individuals go, it was us. Mm-hmm. It was us. You know,
can't tell you what it was, but it was
that's
me.
That's right. We were there.
Here's my jumpsuit.
We saw it. We were there. We scared the crap out of this guy, I'm sure. But we couldn't risk sticking around and trying to explain to a civilian officer what we were doing.
Check out my tacky white overalls for proof.
Yeah. Nothing like that ever came out. So I see where Jerome Clark says, this doesn't make sense. You know, this is just a lot of talk. You know, they're not backing it up. Air Force says we don't have to back it up. This is what we're going to tell you, and that's all we're going to say about it.
It's what the official line is. Gotta abide.
So that's their stance, but there are other theories as to what Lonnie Zamora may have seen, and there's more than one. Okay. And it's all been in an effort to just try to explain what it is. And so one of them is that Lonnie saw a mirage. Okay. Yeah. A mirage. So British UFO skeptic Stuart Campbell suggested that what Zamora witnessed was, quote, almost certainly a mirage of Canopus, which is the second brightest star in the night sky, which could have been refracted unusually due to atmospheric conditions. But it has been argued that this theory doesn't explain the physical traces that were left on the ground that more than just Zamora saw.
You're telling me that Canopus the star refracted to the point where it put it on the ground?
Yeah. And
had two people come out of it and then scorched a plant.
I mean, that makes no sense at all. This theory
is stupid. This guy is stupid. Sorry. But to think that this would explain it, this is the kind of explanation that drives me bat crap crazy when we discuss this stuff. Because like you have said, this is not low-hanging fruit. This is rotted fruit on the ground, and now you're smashing it with a baseball bat.
Yeah, exactly.
This is this is more implausible than a UFO.
That's what I thought.
You want to talk about Occam's razor? It is not Canopus.
Like, you'd have been better just to not say anything.
Yeah, because keep your dang mouth shut.
If you tell me that, I'm going, you think I'm stupid.
Exactly.
I mean, you really do. If you're going to tell me that kind of crap and think, you think I'm an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's one of the theories that has, you know, been touted.
That hurts me that somebody would put that out there seriously and expect people to believe.
Yep. Adam, you know, and I know you feel this too, getting a good night's sleep can be tough. I mean, when you work all day, you've got to get up the next day, you've got everything's just constantly going and going. Sometimes getting that time to just relax and fall to sleep, it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I've struggled with it at times, and I know you have too. And if you take something for it, you wind up waking up groggy, you know, just kind of sleepy the next morning. You just can't get moving. And then you're down in a coffee or an energy drink to try to wake yourself up. And then you're crashing by midday.
Yep.
It's a nightmare, and you're just going to start it over the night before. But that's where I brought in Beams Dream Powder. Because when it comes to getting up and getting stuff done, like, you know, researching for a podcast,
yep,
sleepless nights are no good, and Dream is a lifesaver.
That's right, and The cool thing about Dream is it's made with a powerful blend of all natural ingredients. So it's got reishi mushrooms, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin. And it's designed to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling amazing. And unlike all the other sleep aids I've tried, you don't have the next day grogginess. You just get the great restful sleep that night, and you're wide awake the next day and feel rested. It has been a lifesaver for me and being able to focus the next day because my focus and my energy came back. I finally was like, okay, hey, I can take on the researching, the editing, and then all the other projects and stuff that keep me busy, helping out at the kids' school, all this stuff that I didn't have the energy for before because I didn't get a good night's sleep. And Beam has already improved over 17.5 million nights of sleep, helping people across the country wake up and feel their best. So here's the deal. Beam's giving our listeners an exclusive offer of up to 40% off their best-selling Dream Powder. That's right, you heard us correct, up to 40% off. So all you've got to do is go to shopbeam.com. That's shopbeam.com/grave and use our code GRAVE at checkout.
That's right. It's shopbeam.com/grave and use our code GRAVE, GRAVE, for up to 40% off. Because better sleep, that's the kind of mystery you can solve. Now, the next one is, this theory says that the UFO in New Mexico could have been a prototype lunar lander that was being tested by personnel from the White Sands Missile Range. This one is a little bit more intriguing.
This theory, to me, holds more water than most other ones do.
It says this explanation is supported by the proximity of the range and the description of the craft, except it's 50, 60 years later, and we've never seen any craft emerge from the government archives that does anything or looks anything like what Zamora saw.
Yeah.
So if you were testing the lunar module, okay, fine. In all this time, you've never come out with a photo, with a diagram, with a blueprint of anything that even remotely looks like that, to let anyone know that way back in the 60s that you were testing this thing, and maybe it wasn't the one you used. Fine. But you don't have anything that says we tried to build something that looked kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Nothing. So that's the one part that a lot of people feel like makes that theory fall flat, is that there's no evidence. I still would lean more towards that theory.
Sure.
Than anything else, really.
One of the things I heard about it that I say, okay, now you're stretching this theory further than it needs to be, is somebody said, well, at that time, because gravity on Earth is more than gravity on the moon, we had to lift it with a helicopter, and the two beings that Zamora saw were probably the pilots of the helicopter that were lifting it. So why that bothers me is, then why didn't Lonnie say that there was a helicopter around it?
Yeah.
And do you hire really short pilots?
Yeah.
Now, I know Tom Cruise is a shorty and, you know, he's a pilot, but, you know, one of the best pilots, but still the two short beings, and he didn't say he saw a helicopter.
Right.
Lonnie would know what a helicopter is, even if he didn't know what the lunar lander was.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
If you're saying that the two beings are helicopter pilots, they had to get there somehow in their helicopter. Mm-hmm. He would have seen the helicopter, and he would have reported that along with this UFO was a helicopter. He wouldn't have completely left that part out. So that's part of what makes me go, yes, this is credible. I'll give you that. It's possible that it could have been a NASA thing, but you're not fitting all of these puzzle pieces together. You're fitting a couple of them, but not all.
Right. And the fact that I would understand why they would be very tight lipped about it when this occurred.
Sure.
But, you know, 2025, I mean, at some point in the last 20 years, you would think they would go, oh yeah, here's this thing we try, or that somebody would just uncover it and put two and two together and say, oh, this looks like the thing that Lonnie Zamora saw. That hadn't happened.
Yeah.
Now, here's another one that's kind of odd. It's been speculated that students from New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology orchestrated a clever and elaborate hoax knowing Zamora's patrol routes and habits. This theory suggest that the students could have created a convincing setup to fool the officer. Then president of the university, nuclear physicist Sterling Colgate, was relatively certain it was his students. He said that Zamora saw, quote, a candle in a balloon, not sophisticated.
Okay.
A candle in a balloon. Okay, I would have preferred that old Sterling
Colgate. So a Chinese lantern. Say
they put this elaborate scene together for him, and they managed mm-hmm. to get. When you say a candle in a balloon, I'm like, you know, he saw individuals walk back and get on this craft when they realized that he was approaching.
Yep, they got on the candle, yep. Matt.
He saw
they
this
climbed
flame.
Aboard the candle.
How many candles do you know can scorch a bush and mm-hmm. and leave, you know, 9-inch divots in the ground?
Yeah, right.
And
right.
again, remember, this was physical evidence that was seen not just by Zamora himself.
Exactly. You know,
this was seen by other officers. It was seen by an investigator from White Sands. You know, they all say, this is what we saw. You know, mm-hmm. that hasn't deviated, nor has that been questioned. So don't tell us that it's some unsophisticated hoax that was done by your students. It, yep. I would believe maybe a very elaborate and sophisticated hoax. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as you said earlier, what, number one, why Zamora? Okay. You would think, well, I mean, what connection would they have that they'd be like, this is the guy, Mr. No yeah. Nonsense police officer that we want to fool. And we're going to do this knowing his patrol route.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many variables could you possibly have to account for that could have taken him away from that patrol route at that particular time?
Yeah.
He stops a speeder. He gets a call, you know, so there's a wreck. And he's going the complete opposite direction. I mean, you can't account for all those variables and know for certain that Lonnie Zamora was going to be driving past that area and even see what you were doing. Because as he described, he lost sight of it trying to drive over to it because of the hills and so forth.
Right.
It wasn't like
right.
it was right on the side of the road. You know, it was off the road. And he was 150 yards from it when he saw these individuals getting on the ship. Now, mm-hmm. that, I mean, a football field and a half away. So, you know, he had that much distance between him. Plus, we know he had driven off the road, you know, for a certain distance, too. Why would you going to stick it way out here and just keep your fingers crossed that this guy's going to see it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, why bother?
That's the thing. Why bother? And again, the explanation for this one is almost insulting
yeah.
to who you're telling. And maybe it's because this guy is like a professor and he thinks, well, because of my status, people are going to believe
maybe.
Me no matter what I say. And so he's like, well, I can just say whatever, and I'm going to say candle. And
so, and then again, I think that this professor is making himself sound ridiculous. If yeah. I'm this professor and I'm either going to say it wasn't any of my students wouldn't do something like this. So it wasn't yeah. mine, or I'm going to say, yeah, it absolutely could have been my students because we have brilliant minds here that can come up with yeah. things, and they could have built this thing on their own. It wasn't a hoax. They were messing around with something they had developed, and when they saw a police officer approaching them, they got scared and thought they were going to be in trouble, and they took off and ran away. I'd believe yeah. that.
Yeah, I mean, that's more plausible.
Why not say something like that? Give your students yeah. some credit, you know,
right.
If you, it, you know, but it,
all they could come up with was a candle and a balloon.
Yeah. Yeah. Are these, you know, goofballs that we have that go to school here. You don't got yeah.
they just had
to
a
go to school at, a dadgum mining and technology university, yeah, for crying out loud.
They just had one of those Chinese paper lanterns, and it totally convinced a police officer and made him think it was a UFO. Yeah. Really? Yeah. I know. It's not as bad as Canopus.
No, it's not.
But it's bordering on that, yeah, bad.
Now,
Canopus.
Because of the area and the time, you know, the era that this happened in, and its location near several military and research installations, it is theorized that Zamora may not have seen aliens, but rather he observed a secret experimental or military aircraft, which was not publicly acknowledged. Now, this is reasonable, I, you know, but I still feel like the Air Force could have said it was us. End of story.
Yeah.
And not done
let it
anything
get as,
else.
Exactly. By, if they had just come out and said, okay, fellas, because by this time there would have been two officers, mm-hmm, there. This is us. This stays between us. Give me your pictures of the area. We don't want anybody knowing about our technology. Mm-hmm. And Zamora and the others would have gone, okay, yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
We're not traitorous. We won't say a
exactly
word.
I mean,
and they wouldn't have let it get to the media and everything.
You think you've already got an investigator from White Sands. You can tell him exactly what to say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You've got two local police officers and a state trooper. You just go to them and say, hey, you got to keep your mouth shut, guys. You know,
yeah,
well, you call their, you know, their superior officers and you go, this is what's going on. These are the officers that were there. We've told them to keep it zipped. We're telling you, make sure they keep it zipped. And we're not going to discuss this any further. There wasn't news crews out there. You know, there wasn't a bunch of tourists with cameras out there. Nothing. It would have been essentially four people.
Easy.
And they could have very simply shut it down with no Project Blue Book investigation. None of that. If it was theirs, but if it
had
wasn't,
an NDA,
yeah,
and then put them under an NDA, and then legally they couldn't have even said anything without getting thrown in jail. And I don't think it would have taken that for Zamora because of his credibility and upstandedness, mm-hmm, as an officer. He would have just said, all right, I won't say anything.
My thought on this is that that's exactly what would have happened if it was theirs.
Yep.
The Air Force brought in Project Blue Book and investigated this. Why? Because they didn't know what it was, and they damn well wanted to know what it was. Is this a foreign power? You know, is this some type of terrorist action? You know, what is this? We need to find out. And when they, mm-hmm, couldn't find out exactly, and they realized that the public had gotten wind of this, they came out with this story. I'm just, you know, so I'm like, they went about this all wrong if that's what their final stance was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, another theory is that maybe he saw some aliens, you know,
mm-hmm,
and it is the most popular theory for sure.
Yeah.
That there is a chance that Lonnie Zamora actually saw an extraterrestrial spacecraft. I mean, they're taking everything into consideration as like the unidentified occupants, the advanced technology that apparently this craft had. But of course, there's no concrete evidence that what he saw was actually a UFO that day. None. We don't have any of that. All we have is the physical evidence, the story from credible individuals that investigated the area at the time. So we still don't know what it was, where it came from. And it's interesting that when you look at Zamora, he did not turn into some type of UFO fanatic. Okay?
Right.
He lived his life. He didn't become some obsessed UFO hunter. He didn't spend hours upon hours speaking to groups trying to convince them of what he saw. Zamora's story remained the same, that he saw what he saw.
Yep.
And he had no reason to lie, and truthfully had a hell of a lot to lose by reporting what he encountered at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this quote, okay? I love his quote. This is from author Garrett Graff. And he wrote the book, UFO, The Inside Story of the U.S. Government's Search for Alien Life Here and Out There. That's the full title of the book. And he says, quote, there's almost no scenario where as an ordinary person, saying that you encountered a flying saucer helps you.
Right.
And right. I was like, dadgum, that is so true.
Yeah.
There is no way that you tell anyone that this is the experience you had and it works out great for you.
Yep. And he said it perfectly because he said, as an ordinary person, you know, if you're like some movie star or whatever, you might be able to get some attention for it. But as just a regular civilian working a job, that ain't going to help.
Not at all. Not even close.
We're not ordinary people, so it might help
That's
us.
That's right. But, we would love it. You know?
Yeah.
You want to talk to us about what we saw? Come on, bring it. Tell us the
please.
Time and date. We'll be there.
I'll talk to you for hours.
Yep, exactly. But what do you guys think? Have you guys heard this story? You know, what do you think that Lonnie Zamora was telling us? As I said at the top, this is the most well-documented case. You know, there is tons and tons and tons of reports that were gathered while they were investigating this. So, do you think you saw something that was from, you know, outer space or at least alien to this world? Do you think it was probably the Air Force and they just bungled it with the public story?
A huge bungle.
What do you think? And the best place to let us know is in our Facebook group. It is called The Graveyard. That's where everybody can come in and share those, you know, your opinions. You know, you can discuss the show. You can talk about some crazy story that you had or that your uncle had 50 years ago, whatever. We just love hearing those stories. And don't forget to go and check out our website. It is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you'll find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. And as we said, we got some new stuff that's going to be showing up in the store. You can listen to the show from the website, and that is where you can become a patron. And you go check that out because there is such a huge back category catalog of bonus episodes from, you know, Patreon episodes, side quest. You name it. We got a ton. Videos, audio, you know, go check that out. I really think you're going to enjoy it. Please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. It really does help by bringing us up when people search for a show like ours. There's a better chance that Graveyard Tales is going to pop up in that search.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.